Section 3.
There was no way of telling the commissioner's quarters, by size alone, from those of any Lunarite. There was no space on the moon, not even for terrestrial officials, no luxurious waste, even as a symbol of the home planet. Nor, for that matter, was there any way of changing the overwhelming fact about the moon, that it was underground at low gravity, even for the greatest Earthman who ever lived. "Man is still the creature of his environment," sighed Louise Montez. "I've been 2 years on the moon, and there have been times when I've been tempted to stay on, but I'm getting on in years. I've just passed my 40th, and if I intend ever to go back to Earth, it had better be now. Any older, and I won't be able to readjust to full gravity."
Conrad Gottstein was only 34. And looked, if anything, younger. He had a wide, round, large-featured face, the kind of face one didn't see among the Lunarites, the kind of face that was something they would draw as part of an earthy caricature. He was not heavily built. It did not pay to send heavily built Earthmen to the moon, and his head seemed too large for his body. He said, and he spoke planetary standard with a perceptibly different accent from that of Montez,
"You sound apologetic."
I am, said Montez.
Where Gottstein's face was intrinsically good-natured in appearance, the long, thin lines of Montez's face were almost comically tragic.
"I am apologetic in both senses. I am embarrassed to be leaving the moon, since it is an attractive world filled with excitement. And I am embarrassed about the embarrassment, ashamed that I should be reluctant to take up Earth's burden, gravity and all.
Yes, I imagine taking back the other 5/6 will be hard," said Gottstein. "I've been on the moon only a few days, and already I feel that 1/6 G is perfectly fine."
"You won't feel that when the constipation starts and you start living on mineral oil," said Montez with a sigh. "But that will pass. And don't think you can imitate the light gazelle just because you feel light. There's an art to it."
"So I understand."
"So you think you understand, Gottstein. You haven't seen the kangaroo walk, have you?"
"On television."
"That doesn't really give you the feel of it. You have to try it. It's the proper mode for crossing level lunar surface at high speed. The feet move together backward and launch you on what would be a simple broad jump on Earth. While you're in midair, they come forward, begin moving back just before they hit the ground again, keep you launched, and so on. The motion seems slow by Earth standards, with only a low gravity whipping you on, but each leap is in excess of 20 feet, and the amount of muscular effort required to keep you in the air, if there were air, is minimal. The sensation is like flying."
"Have you tried it? Can you do it?"
"I've tried it, but no Earthman can really do it. I've kept it up for as many as 5 leaps in a row, enough to get the sensation. Just enough to want to do more. But then there is the inevitable miscalculation, a loss of synchronization, and you tumble and slide for a quarter of a mile. The Lunarites are polite and never laugh at you. Of course it's easy for them. They start as children and pick it up at once without trouble."
"It's their world," said Gottstein, chuckling. "Think how they'd be on Earth."
"They wouldn't be on Earth. They can't. I suppose that's an advantage on our side. We can be either on Moon or on Earth. They can live only on the Moon. We tend to forget that, because we confuse the Lunarites with Immies."
"With what?"
"That's what they call the Earth immigrants. Those who live on the moon more or less permanently, but were born and raised on the Earth. The immigrants can, of course, return to the Earth. But the real Lunarites have neither the bones nor the muscles to withstand the Earth's gravity. There were some tragedies in that respect in the moon's early history.
Oh?
Oh, yes. People who returned with their moon-born children. We tend to forget. We've had our own crisis, and the few dying children don't seem important in the light of the huge casualties of the late 20th and all that followed. Here on the moon, though, every dead Lunarite who succumbed to the gravity of Earth is remembered. It helps them feel a world apart, I think. Gottstein said, I thought I had been thoroughly briefed on Earth, but it seems I will still have a lot to learn. Impossible to learn everything about the moon from a post on Earth, so I have left you a full report, as my predecessor did for me. You'll find the moon fascinating and, in some ways, excruciating. I doubt that you've eaten lunar rations on Earth, and if you're going by description only, you will not be prepared for the reality. But you'll have to learn to like it. It's bad policy to ship Earth items here. We've got to eat and drink the local products. You've been doing it for 2 years? I guess I'll survive. I've not been doing it steadily. There are periodic furloughs to Earth. Those are obligatory, whether you want them or not. They've told you that, I'm sure. Yes, said Gottstein. Despite any exercises you do here, you will have to subject yourself to full gravity now and then, just to remind your bones and muscles what it's like. And when you're on Earth, you'll eat. And occasionally some food is smuggled in. Gottstein said, my luggage was carefully inspected, of course, but it turned out there was a can of corned beef in my coat pocket. I had overlooked it. So did they. Montez smiled slowly and said hesitantly, I suspect you are now going to offer to share it. No. Said Gottstein judiciously, wrinkling his large button nose. I was going to say, with all the tragic nobility I could muster, here, Montez, have it all. Thy need is greater than mine. He stumbled a bit in trying to say this, since he rarely used second-person singular in planetary standard. Montez smiled more broadly, and then let it vanish. He shook his head. No. In a week, I'll have all the Earth food I can eat. You won't. Your mouthfuls will be few in the next few years, and you will spend too much time regretting your present generosity. You keep it all. I insist. I would but be earning your hatred ex post facto. He seemed serious, his hand on the other's shoulder, his eyes looking straight into Gottstein's. Besides, he said, there is something I want to talk to you about that I've been putting off, because I don't know how to approach it, and this food would be an excuse for further sidetracking. Gottstein put away the earth can at once. There was no way in which his face could match the other's seriousness, but his voice was grave and steady. Is there something you could not put into your dispatches, Montez? There was something I tried to put in, Gottstein. But between my not knowing how to phrase it and Earth's reluctance to grasp my meaning, we ended up not communicating. You may do better. I hope you do. One of the reasons I have not asked to have my tour of duty extended is that I can no longer take the responsibility of my failure to communicate. You make it sound serious. I wish I could make it sound serious. Frankly, it sounds silly. There are only some 10,000 people in the lunar colony. Rather less than half are native Lunarites. They're hampered by an insufficiency of resources, an insufficiency of space. A harsh world, and yet,
And yet, said Gottstein, encouragingly, there is something going on here. I don't know exactly what, which may be dangerous.
How can it be dangerous? What can they do? Make war against the Earth?
Gottstein's face trembled on the brink of a smile crease.
No, no. It's more subtle than that.
Montez passed his hand over his face, rubbing his eyes petulantly.
Let me be frank with you.
Earth has lost its nerve.
What does that mean?
Well, what would you call it? Just about the time the lunar colony was being established, Earth went through the Great Crisis. I don't have to tell you about that.
No, you don't, said Gottstein with distaste.
The population is 2 billion now from its 6 billion peak.
Earth is much better for that, isn't it?
Oh, undoubtedly, though I wish there had been a better way of achieving the drop.
But it's left behind a permanent distrust of technology, a vast inertia, a lack of desire to risk change because of the possible side effects. Great and possibly dangerous efforts have been abandoned because the danger was feared more than greatness was desired.
I take it you refer to the program on genetic engineering.
That's the most spectacular case, of course.
But not the only one, said Montez bitterly.
Frankly, I can't get excited over the abandonment of genetic engineering. It was a tissue of failures.
We lost our chance at intuitionism. There has never been any evidence that intuitionism is desirable, and considerable indications of its undesirability. Besides, what about the lunar colony itself? This certainly is no indication of stagnation on Earth.
It is, said Montez vigorously. The lunar colony is a hangover, a last remnant of the period before the crisis, something that was carried through as a last sad forward thrust of mankind before the Great Retreat.
That's too dramatic, Montez.
I don't think so.
The Earth has retreated. Mankind has retreated. Everywhere but on the moon. The lunar colony is man's frontier, not just physically, but psychologically too. Here is a world that doesn't have a web of life to disrupt, that doesn't have a complex environment in delicate balance to upset. Everything on the moon that is of any use to man is man-made. The moon is a world constructed by man from the start. And out of basics, there is no past.
Well, on Earth, we are unmanned by our longing for a pastoral past that never really existed, and that, if it had existed, could never exist again. In some respects, much of the ecology was disrupted in the crisis, and we are making do with the remnants so that we are frightened, always frightened. On the moon, there is no past to long for or dream about. There is no direction but forward.
Montez seemed to be catching fire with his own words. He said, Gottstein, I have watched it for 2 years. You will watch it for at least that much longer. There is a fire here on the moon, a restless burning. They expand in every direction. They expand physically. Every month, new corridors are bored, new living quarters established, a new population potential made room for. They expand as far as resources are concerned. They find new construction materials, new water sources, new loads of specialized minerals. They expand their sun power battery banks, enlarge their electronics factories. I suppose you know that these 10,000 people here on the moon are now the major source for Earth's supply of many electronic devices and fine biochemicals.
I know they're an important source.
Earth lies to itself for comfort's sake. The moon is the major source. At the present rate, it may become the sole source in the near future. It's growing intellectually, too. Godstein, I imagine there isn't a bright, science-oriented youngster on Earth who doesn't vaguely, or perhaps not so vaguely, dream of going to the moon one day. With Earth in retreat from technology, the moon is where the action is. You're referring to the proton synchrotron, I suppose. That's one example. When was the last new synchrotron built on Earth? But it's just the biggest and most dramatic item, not the only or even the most important. If you want to know the most important scientific device on the moon, something so secret I haven't been told. No, something so obvious that no one seems to notice. It's the 10,000 brains here, the 10,000 best human brains there are. The only close-knit group of 10,000 human brains that are, in principle and by emotion, science-oriented. Gottstein moved restlessly and tried to shift his chair's position. It was bolted to the floor and wouldn't move, but in the attempt to do so, Gottstein found himself skittering out of the chair. Montez reached out an arm to steady him. Gottstein flushed. Sorry. You'll get used to the gravity. Gottstein said, but aren't you making it out a lot worse than it is? Earth isn't a know-nothing planet altogether. We did develop the electron pump. That's a purely terrestrial accomplishment. No lunarite had anything to do with it. Montez shook his head and muttered a few words in his native Spanish. They didn't sound like placid words. He said, have you ever met Frederick Hallam? Gottstein smiled. Yes, as a matter of fact, I have. The father of the electron pump. I believe he has the phrase tattooed on his chest. The mere fact that you smile and make that remark proves my point, really. Ask yourself, could a man like Hallam really have fathered the electron pump? For the unthinking multitude, the story will do, but the fact is, and you must know it if you stop to think about it, there is no father to the electron pump. The para people, the people in the para universe, whoever they are and whatever that is, invented it. Hallam was their accidental instrument. All of Earth is their accidental instrument. We were clever enough to take advantage of their initiative. Yes, as cows are clever enough to eat the hay we provide for them, the pump is no sign that man is forward-looking. Quite the reverse. If the pump is a backward step, then I say good for backwardness. I wouldn't want to do without it. Who would? But the point is, it fits Earth's present mood perfectly. Infinite energy at virtually zero cost, except for maintenance, and with zero pollution besides. But there are no electron pumps on the moon. Gottstein said, I imagine there's no need for them. The solar batteries supply what the lunarites require. Infinite energy and virtually zero cost, except for maintenance, and with zero pollution besides. Isn't that the litany? Yes, indeed. But the solar batteries are entirely man-made. That's the point I'm making. An electron pump was projected for the moon. Installation was attempted. And? And it didn't work. The para people didn't accept the tungsten. Nothing happened. I didn't know that. Why not? Montez lifted his shoulders and eyebrows expressively. How is one to know? We might assume, for instance, that the para people live on a world without a satellite.
that they have no conception of separate worlds in close proximity, each populated. That having found one, they did not seek another. Who knows? The point is that the para people didn't bite, and we ourselves, without them, could do nothing.
We ourselves, repeated Gottstein thoughtfully. By that, you mean the Earthmen?
Yes.
And the Lunarites? They were not involved. Were they interested?
I don't know.
That's where my uncertainty and fear chiefly rests. The Lunarites, the native Lunarites particularly, do not feel like Earthmen. I don't know what their plans are or what they intend. I can't find out.
Gottstein looked thoughtful. But what can they do? Do you have any reason to suppose they intend to do us harm? Or that they can do Earth harm even if they intend it?
I can't answer that question. They are an attractive and intelligent people. It seems to me they lack real hatred or real rage or even real fear. But perhaps that is what only seems to me. What bothers me most is that I don't know.
The scientific equipment on the moon is run by Earth, I believe.
That is correct. The proton synchrotron is. The radio telescope on the trans-terrestrial side is. The 300-inch optical telescope is.
The large equipment, that is. All of which has been in existence for 50 years.
And what's been done since?
Very little by Earthmen.
What about the Lunarites?
I'm not sure. Their scientists work in the large installations, but I once tried to check time cards.
There are gaps.
Gaps?
They spend considerable time away from the large installations. It is as though they had laboratories of their own.
Well, if they produce many electronic devices and fine biochemicals, isn't that to be expected?
Yes, but, Gottstein, I don't know. I fear my ignorance.
There was a moderately long pause. Gottstein said, Montes, I take it you are telling me all this so that I will be careful, so that I will try to find out what the Lunarites are doing.
I suppose that's about it, said Montes unhappily.
But you don't even know that they're doing anything at all.
I feel that they are.
Gottstein said, It's odd, then. I should be trying to talk you out of all this fearful mysticism of yours. But it's odd.
What is?
The same vessel that brought me to the moon brought someone else to the moon. I mean, a large party came. But one face in particular triggered something. I didn't talk to him, had no occasion to, and I dismissed the matter. But now our talk is pushing a button, and he suddenly comes back to mind.
Yes?
I was on a committee once that dealt with electron pump matters. A question of safety. He smiled briefly. Earth's lost nerve, you might say. We worry about safety everywhere. And a good thing, damn it, lost nerve or not. The details escape me, but in connection with that hearing, I saw that face that now I saw on the vessel. I'm convinced of it.
Does that have significance, do you think?
I'm not sure. I associate that face with something disturbing. If I keep on thinking, it may come back to me. In any case, I had better get a list of the passengers and see if any name means something to me. Too bad, Montes. But I think you're getting me started.
Not bad at all, said Montes. I'm glad of it. As for this man, it may be he is only a tourist of no consequence, and will be gone in 2 weeks. But I am glad to have you thinking about the matter.
Gottstein did not seem to be listening. He is a physicist, or a scientist of some sort, he muttered. I'm certain of it, and I associate him with danger.